What would you put in your backpack if you had a new coaching engagement but could only take a limited number of items? Each episode, the Coach's Backpack looks at the multifaceted world of coaching and asks a new guest to tell us what they would take with them and why. Hi, I'm David Lowe, and this week we're taking a peek inside the backpack of team coach Sebastian Fox from Brown Fox Consultancy. Welcome, Sebastian.
Hello, David.
And we're going to jump straight in with the first question I have for you, which is, how would you describe what you do in under 20 words?
So what I do is to help teams make sense of what's getting in the way of them becoming more effective.
Okay. So you've been asked to coach a new client, but are limited to what you can take with you. So don't worry, you've got your essentials, you've got your clothes and your toothbrush. And in addition to those, you can take one book, one tool or technique or concept or method or approach or whatever you want to call it, one other item of your choice, plus a person from the past or the present to accompany you. So, Sebastian Fox, what and whom would you take with you and why?
Yeah, so I was thinking about this, and you know, of all the books that are available, I'm making an assumption it has to be a coaching book, incidentally, although it doesn't need to be, I guess. But I did think about this, and I thought, if since it is a team coaching we talk about, that actually a book called Mastering the Art of Team Coaching by Georgina Woodstra would probably be my choice of book, because it's a really accessible overview of team coaching. And it's not a how-to guide as such, but it's a way of helping team coaches understand what's important to them in team coaching and to give them some idea of how to go about developing their own team coaching practice. And it's a useful reference guide to go back to as well. So I think that would probably be the book I would take with me.
That's Woodstra, spelled Woodstra, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So I don't want you to spoil the punchline, but if you were going to either pick a golden nugget from this book or a summary of it, what would you pick from it?
Well, that's a really difficult question, David, because there was so much in there. What would I pick? I think it's probably something around the importance of being congruent as a coach in your philosophy and belief and theories of change and the way that you go about coaching. So in other words, not, for example, using one size fits all model for all teams, whilst believing that actually each team is individual and unique and will require its own ways of working. So, you know, that's a fairly extreme example, of course, but you know, I think that runs through in lots of different ways. And for me, that's really the most important thing, that your philosophy and stance and way that you approach your coaching is completely congruent with your beliefs as a coach.
Okay. So Seb, what is team coaching?
Yeah, that's a great question, because, you know, you ask 10 team coaches what they mean by team coaching and you'll get 10 different answers. And it's not helped by the fact that the ICF can't make up their own minds what team coaching is. And their paper, which was issued a couple of years ago, actually uses a table to define a spectrum of potential practices which are team coaching. So that's a difficult one to answer. And, you know, I said at the outset what I do. So that's really my description of team coaching. But you'll find lots of people who say that team coaching is about enabling high performance. It's about building relationships. It's about helping teams develop better processes, ways of working. So it really is quite a broad church, and it's really down to the individual coach for them to decide and define what they mean by team coaching. So if you ask that question, another team coach, a completely different answer to the one I've given.
So team by definition implies at least a group of people. Where do you stand on fitting one-to-one coaching in that as well?
Yeah, so again, you will get, I think, very different views from different team coaches on this. But my own personal view is that if a team is undergoing a team coaching intervention, then the team leader, as a minimum, also needs to be undertaking coaching at the same time. Whether it's from one of the team coaches or not is a point. Again, if it were me, then it would be me or my co-coach who were doing the one-to-one coaching as well. But there are other people who take a view that causes potential conflicts and confidentiality issues, and it's better to have a third party or no coach at all. So again, opinions vary. As to whether the rest of the team is coached, I think that depends on the situation. I've been in coaching programs where the whole of the team has been coached at the same time individually as well as a team. Sometimes just the team leader and sometimes in between. So, you know, there's no hard and fast rules on that. It really just depends on the context and the needs of the team at the time.
So with one-to-one coaching, it's a lot easier in terms of confidentiality. It's a lot clearer. It is confidential. Of course, there's those exceptions. With a team, the confidentiality gets a bit trickier, doesn't it?
Yeah, yes, it does. But, you know, I would argue that as long as you're clear about your contracting and your confidentiality, it doesn't create any more problems than one-to-one coaching. But you've obviously got multiple people that you're having to maintain that confidentiality with. And you know, the obvious unasked question is, well, what happens if you hear something in the one-to-one coaching, which then impacts what's going to happen in the next team coaching session? And the answer is, well, if it's something that's been contracted that you can bring back to the session, which sometimes it is, then you can. If it's not, then you can't. And sometimes it's appropriate to ask the individual whether they might raise it, but, you know, only if there's a sufficient level of psychological safety in the team. So you're absolutely right. It can be a lot more complicated and a lot more difficult, but as long as you're careful and rigorous about the contracting and about the way that you agree the confidentiality and how it's going to work, it doesn't usually present a problem.
Mm. And multiple teams, again, within the same organisation, adds another layer on.
Absolutely. So, you know, it is something that is always front of mind. But, you know, usually if you're coaching someone individually and they say something which you know pertains to what's been discussed in a team coaching session, we'll probably ask, okay, can you raise that in the next session? So they'll say yes or no, and if they say no, well, you know, you can't raise it, that's it. So, you know, it's not usually a problem in my experience.
Okay, what else are you going to put in your backpack?
So I think the other person I think is absolutely central is actually my co-coach. Team coaching is an extremely complex and difficult engagement, and I think, you know, much more so than facilitation or training or indeed one-to-one coaching. So I will always coach with another person. So she is both the person of my choice and the item, and well, it's not an item, but that's the other thing I would bring is my co-coach, because she's absolutely essential to a successful coaching engagement.
Always the same person?
No, historically I've coached with different people, but once you strike up a sort of an understanding with someone and get comfortable with their ways of working, I tend to stick with them because otherwise you just have to go through all the pain of relearning all of that and rebuilding relationships and getting to understand each other. So I tend to coach now just with the same person. It's not as though we have an exclusive agreement that we can only coach with each other. She coaches with someone else, for example.
Mm-hmm. That spoiled my fun, because I was hoping you were going to say, no, there's a pool of people, and my question to you was going to be, who's your favourite?
Sorry.
Okay, well, you can have two of her if you want, as the person and and the thing. But you've got two more items to choose for your backpack. So
two more items. So I'm afraid I might be spoiling the question slightly, because the other thing that I would take is some space. And what I mean by that is that in team coaching, use of physical space can be really, really powerful. So, you know, when you might have a Lego, some pieces of Lego or some drawing or some pens or something to make a constellation with in one-to-one coaching that you can put on a table or a chair or on the floor. When you're working with a team, it's a space that you are working in that can actually be used for all those purposes. And getting people, for example, when you first work with a team, to stand on a spectrum, you know, two polarities representing whatever it might be, it can be really interesting to see how they might all cluster together at one end, and there might be one person at the other end, or how they might form two little groups. It tells you a lot. So space is the one thing I would take, if I could take a space is a thing.
You're allowed to take space. You definitely put some space into your backpack. Before you move on, I want to dig into this. So as this is a dream world, is there any more specific elements about your space that you'd like, or just any space?
No, it can be any space, because you can work with whatever space you are in. Doesn't need anything particular to make it work, you know, as long as people are able to move about in some way and there is space to move. So I mean, you wouldn't try in a lift, for example. In most rooms where you're holding a meeting, it would be whatever space is available. If you're coaching online, obviously it's a bit different. You then might have to get people to do it in a different way. But yeah, when you're coaching with the team in a room, whatever space is available in that room is fine.
Well, you've just brought this up now. So when you're online, which I'm assuming happens a lot more these days for you, how do you replicate space virtually?
Yeah, I mean, the short answer is you have to look at it in very different ways. And there are certain apps and things you can use when you're in an online meeting that allow you to replicate it in some measure. So, for example, you might put up a poll or a whiteboard where you just, you know, literally just sketch on a couple of polarities and ask people to mark where they feel they are. And that is also quite a good way of doing it. It doesn't quite have the same impact as it does if you're working actually in a physical space, but it can still tell you an awful lot about what's going on in the team, and more importantly, tell the team themselves a lot about what's going on in the team that they haven't necessarily acknowledged or been aware of.
Final item then for your backpack.
Yes, the final item. Well, again, I'm not sure I have an item as such. Let me answer the question in a slightly different way, which is to say that what I wouldn't come with is a model or fixed process about how the team coaching is going to go. You know, my own personal belief is that each team in each context is unique. So coming with a six-step model or six-step process, which says you start here and end here, it might work, but it might not. So actually my own belief and my own practice is very emergent. And that means you deal with what's in front of you at the time. That may or may not be expected. Quite often is unexpected. But, you know, it's important then to have the wherewithal to help the team in whatever way is required in the moment. That may actually turn out to be a bit of facilitation. It may be putting them into the breakout rooms. It may be getting to sit down or go outside and have some fresh air if it's in a virtual room. It may be to do a bit of active experimentation. You know, there's really no hard and fast rules here, because it really is down to what does the team need at that point in time.
So I know you're going to probably hate this question then in light of that. But one thing I was going to ask is, what's the most common or biggest blocker that teams often have?
Yeah, so having said that each team is unique and each context is unique, it's also fair to say that the common causes of lack of effectiveness, or there are perhaps some common causes of lack of effectiveness, and in no particular order, that might be ineffective team leader. It might be something to do with the relational dynamics in the team. So two or more people don't get on together. It might be to do with something much more systemic. So the way that they interact with other teams, preventing them from performing to their full effectiveness, or something that the organization requires them to do is getting in the way of being effective, or indeed the processes they have are just ineffective. So it tends to be something around one of those things, you know, as a gross generalization, because of course there are lots of other issues that the team might wish to address, but those tend to be the common factors.
When you said a six-step, I do have a six-step guide that I wrote once. And it is not necessarily a do this, do this, do this. More of a check-in on, you know, the first one is, do you know why you exist? You know, very much you can go back to Simon Sinek if you want, or anyone else around that. But it's, why is that team in existence? Right? And if they don't know that, and often one of the things I see is that the leadership, or you said the team leader might be ineffective, hasn't identified clearly what the team's purpose is. Because if you don't have that, I feel that then you've got a little hope.
Yeah, and look, you know, I'm not saying that we, together with my co-coach, will not go in with a set of questions or a pretty good idea of what we're going to do first off. That won't necessarily be what is your purpose. And actually, that's a really important question, actually. I think it's a really important question. But we're more likely to go in and start asking the team around whatever's presenting to them at that moment in time, based possibly on a diagnostics where we may have asked them a question. That may be purpose, actually, but quite often we tend to find it's not. There are other things which are more present for them, so we tend to deal with those first, and then purpose might well come up as an issue coming out of that. Oh, well, all this isn't happening, it's because we've done something what we're here for. That's quite common. So I'm not disagreeing with you at all. I'm just, I think it's just the way we approach it.
Mm. And totally agree that one approach does not fit all. I am 100% with you on that. And it's alarming when people seem to imply that, well, I'll come in and I'll do this.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I feel that you've not used all of the ability to take things, because you've got Georgina Wooster's book. Mm. You've got your co-coach as the person. You've got some physical space, but then your approach or methodology, whatever, is not to have an approach or methodology that is strict and always followed. So you've got another option now of, I always ask, what is the one thing, if you were checking your bag, because someone might have helped you pack, what's the one thing you wouldn't want to be in there? Now, you've kind of already answered it, but so I think you're allowed another thing to make sure is not in there, if you wish.
Okay, I'm going to answer that actually two ways, and you can edit them out or change it to fit in as you wish. But actually, there is probably one other thing I might make sure is in there, depending on the situation. And I might have my big marker pens and lots of post-it pads and some big A3 paper, because if the team are working at something, it's quite useful to have lots of post-it notes and big marker pens. So that might well go in to the bag, actually. In terms of what I wouldn't take, that's probably preconceptions. And it's very hard not to go in with preconceptions, actually, or expectations. It's really hard, because, you know, whenever you talk to a team leader or a team, you immediately start forming an idea of what you might find and what might be presenting. But you never really know until you walk into the room virtually or physically and start engaging with the team and really start feeling what's going on. And only then can you start getting a sense of really what's going on in the team. And you know, we were talking a little earlier as well about how my practice is emergent and I wouldn't take a specific model or process in with me. And you know, just to be clear, I will happily use models or techniques or things if they're appropriate at the time. Just they may not be appropriate, they may not be the same for different teams. But I think the one area I am increasingly aware of is about not setting goals too early, because something certainly I was trained to do, follow, grow. But actually, when you're with a team, setting goals too early is not very helpful, actually, because it focuses on the wrong thing. It might create dissonance if you're not actually working towards that goal, which is quite likely. So actually being able to build a sense of the context and what's going on, what the team itself think they actually need is more important, in my opinion, than setting goals at the outset. So that would be my answer in terms of what I wouldn't take is preconceptions and the need to set goals up front.
Mm, okay. I don't know the science behind this, but when we get into unconditional positive regard, for example, from Carl Rogers, or that being non-judgmental with people, often people say, well, we are judgmental beings, right? And I don't know how much that is true, but My view is it's very difficult to not have judgment, but not showing them is the important part.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. You know, I personally believe it's impossible not to have some preconceptions. I think the important thing is to be aware of them and, as you say, put them aside and acknowledge them for what they are and let emerge whatever's going to come out.
Okay, well, we should probably start to wrap this up. So one final question.
Yeah.
On this amazing fictional gig that you have coming up, where do you hope you are or are not going?
So I'm choosing to interpret that question slightly more widely, perhaps, than it's intended. But for me right now, what really interests me is doing research and team coaching. So I can see myself taking more time doing research and helping other team coaches make sense of what they're doing with teams.
Okay. So Seb, if people want to know more about you and what you're doing and your research, where can they go?
So the easiest thing to do is either go to the website, which is www.brownfoxconsultancy.com, or else drop me an email, sebastian@brownfoxconsultancy.com, and I'm very happy to have a chat with anybody who's interested in finding out more.
Okay, marvellous. We shall put links on the show notes, as usual. Well, thank you very much for being our guest.
My pleasure. I really enjoyed the conversation. Thank you.
And thank you for joining us on this episode of The Coach's Backpack. If you would like extra goodies such as free tools, offers, further info about our guests, and maybe even the odd peek inside their actual backpack, sign up to our mailing list at thecoachesbackpack.com. And don't forget to follow the podcast too. See you next time.